from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, tensions between the U.S. and Iran have soared after a U.S. airstrike killed top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in Baghdad. As the U.S. braces for retaliatory attacks, we look at the repercussions of President Trump's decision and get your reaction. Then, if you've pledged to take part in Dry January, that is, to start the new year taking a break from alcohol, we've got experts with tips on how to do this successfully. That's all next on Forum, after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. President Trump said today Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was plotting to kill many Americans. His tweet follows the U.S. airstrike that killed the top general in Iran and an Iraqi militia's deputy commander, among others, overnight. The question now is how Iran will respond. Its supreme leader declared 3 days of mourning and warned of harsh vengeance. Joining me now is Jonathan Marcus. He is defense and diplomatic correspondent for the BBC. Thanks for joining us, Jonathan.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
So the option of taking out Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was rejected previously by both Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama. Why? I mean, what were the risks?
Well, the risks are huge. I mean, clearly, one obvious risk is that the Iranians try to enact some proportionate response, that you have a series of actions and reactions that lead ultimately to an all-out direct conflict between the United States and Iran. Equally, we could see a whole range of activities, more of the same kind of activity we've already seen, attacks on shipping in the Gulf, attempts to force the U.S. Out of Iraq, destabilization in Libya and elsewhere. So, it's really at the moment unclear precisely what the Iranians may do. And remember, it's not just the Iranians. Many of these Shia proxy militias that they back may equally take actions of their own. So it's a very worrying and disturbing prospect. Really, we're still at a loss to know precisely why the United States decided to take action now. As you say, Mr. Soleimani has been in the Americans' crosshairs for a very, very long time. Why the decision to act now was taken is still unclear.
Well, you have laid out some of Iran's retaliatory capabilities, its potential targets. Where are we most vulnerable in terms of U.S. troops, for example, our defenses?
Well, obviously, the American military footprint in the Middle East is much smaller than it was, but there's still a significant presence. You have a naval base in Bahrain, shipping in the Gulf. You have a number of air bases in the Gulf states, Kuwait and Qatar, obviously. I think clearly it's the American military in Iraq, still some 5,000 strong, who have already been under attack from Iranian proxies, who will be potentially very much in the firing line. You also have a small now military presence in eastern Syria. They too could be vulnerable. But really here, you know, this has opened a can of worms. I mean, having taken out a senior Iraqi general, a commander, might senior military figures from the United States around the world be at risk? One would assume that their security details are being stepped up or are certainly at a greater level of vigilance. It's just not clear. Is the response going to come in kind? Is it going to come in the region itself? Or could Iran decide to exact its revenge somewhere else in the world?
So you're saying, you know, you may not, even though there's a pledge of harsh vengeance based on Iran's behavior and capabilities, especially since the U.S. pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, you could see something more asymmetric.
Well, one could, and I think that's a strong possibility. The Iranians may decide that they want to take a response but not do something that might inevitably put them on the path to a direct confrontation with Washington. The difficulty is that the scale of what President Trump has done is so significant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to imagine an equivalent figure in the United States. I wouldn't like to mention any names, but, you know, General Soleimani is often suggested as the second highest ranking figure in Iran. He was also widely popular, despite the fact that the regime itself may be unpopular in many quarters. He was seen as a man who was fighting for his country, who was a skilled operator. And indeed, he is the architect, of course, and this is presumably why he was struck. He is the architect of the growth of Iranian influence and power in the region. A position that was, of course, paradoxically sparked off by Washington's removal of Saddam Hussein's Iraq, which was the strategic counterweight, if you like, to Iran. But in that space that opened up for Tehran, General Soleimani was absolutely the chief architect of Iran's rise, of the export of its revolutionary power. He was, in a way, kind of diplomat, general, the whole thing rolled into one. As a veteran U.S. diplomat Ryan Crocker described him, he's kind of the Darth Vader of the Iranian system.
Yes, well, we've certainly, you know, heard him as the brutal killer, as Republicans have defended President Trump's actions and reminded us that the general is responsible for hundreds of American deaths over decades. But you are talking about, Jonathan Marcus, the propaganda value of Soleimani's death. How is that playing out right now in Iran?
Well, there's obviously a great deal of unease and concern, a great deal of public protestations of support for the regime and so on. Amongst the regime loyalists, obviously, this is a terrible and devastating blow. As I say, he was more broadly popular, and I think that will also lead to some sympathy. On the other hand, people do not want to see Iran plunged into an all-out conflict with the United States, and I think that has to be a factor in the Iranian leadership's considerations as well. They will want to do something, clearly, but maybe they won't want to do something that's on an equivalent scale, if you like, to actually prompt an even more radical U.S. response. That's why I think the asymmetric route, as you mentioned, is more likely. I think general disturbances in many parts of the region where Iran is able to wield influence is likely. And as I say, I think the long-term position of the Americans in Iraq must be questionable now. It's not too difficult to make America's presence in Iraq untenable. And indeed, it was the missile attacks by Iranian proxies on U.S. bases in Iraq, which were very much the genesis of this particular dramatic step.
We're talking with Jonathan Marcus, defense and diplomatic correspondent for the BBC. We're talking to him about the U.S. drone strike that was authorized by President Trump that killed top Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. The Pentagon has said President Trump ordered the strike to disrupt an imminent attack on Americans in the Middle East. I want to invite you, our listeners, to join this conversation with your questions. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook, or at our email address, forum@kqed.org. And Steve writes, this is an act of war and a war crime. How would you characterize, Jonathan Marcus, whether this is an act of war? We've heard other people declare it as such as well. Do you think that this does qualify?
Well, look, there's no doubt the United States and Iran are, in a sense, in a low-level war already, either through proxies or directly. You know, the Iranians are responsible for significant numbers of American deaths in the region. There's no doubt about that. The United States has brought huge economic pressure to bear on Iran in an attempt to cripple its economy, and whatever the United States says, presumably with the goal ultimately of changing the regime there in some way. I think the problem is that, you know, it's not really The arguments of whether this is legal, I mean, I think in strict terms of international law, it's clearly not legal, but lots of the things governments do are not legal. Many of the things the Iranians do are clearly not legal either. That's not really the point. The point is where this leads us. And I think we're at the end now, or not at the end, but we are a good way along a process that began in May 2018 when President Trump unilaterally withdrew from the international nuclear agreement with Iran. Since then, the pressure has been growing on Tehran. The need for Iran somehow to push back against that pressure has grown proportionately as well. And that is what has brought us to this moment. And with no obvious, you know, diplomatic off-ramp for either country, that is why people are so concerned that this low-level war may actually, in the wake of this drone strike, actually develop very quickly into a much more significant confrontation.
And this is really a central concern in terms of whether or not there really is a comprehensive or well-thought-out strategy here. What can we look to as evidence that there is or there is not? Because certainly concerns have been raised about how many lawmakers, especially Democrats in Congress, were completely taken by surprise by this action, an action of this magnitude.
Well, look, they weren't the only one taken by surprise. Nearly all of America's allies.
No, but Congress, of course, is supposed to be very much involved in these kinds of processes.
Absolutely. But, you know, if you said to me what was the general response to all of this, a gasp, I think, was the initial response when we woke up to the news in the early hours of this morning. Look, it's a real problem here. I think the Trump administration does not get good marks in terms of developing a strategy. It has set for the Middle East, let alone in many other regions of the world. It's appeared to set out contradictory goals. It walked away from that nuclear agreement with Iran without any clear support from its allies, without any clear proposal of how it was going to get Iran back to the negotiating table. At times, the United States has sent out signals that it is eager to withdraw from the Middle East as a region, that it's a region that doesn't matter anymore to Washington, that it's a region that if its allies are concerned about, they should do the heavy lifting. We saw that in Syria. Then we saw a reversal and some American forces remaining in the country. And I think throughout all of these twists and turns and the uncertainty, it has kind of expanded the room, the envelope within which the Iranians have been operating. If you think about it like this, obviously at one end, a dream, we would have absolute peace between Iran and the United States, and they would each be the sorts of country that the other would like to deal with. At the other end, we hope we can avoid this, you have all-out war. Well, over recent years, what's actually been happening is something rather nasty but limited in the middle, in a kind of gray zone, an undeclared war, various kinds of strikes, pressure activities and so on, which have been kept in reasonably clear limits. Those limits changed as the Americans appeared to be less and less interested in the region. That's one of the explanations for the growing concern in Saudi Arabia, the growing concern in Israel. We saw the downing of a U.S. drone, no real response. We saw the attacks on Saudi oil installations, no real U.S. response. That led the Iranians to believe, I think, that they had slightly greater margin of maneuver than perhaps they actually had. Now, that threshold, if you like, has now been slammed down by this strike ordered by Donald Trump. Whether the Iranians are happy to accept that message, tone down their activities, constrain their activities back to the, in inverted commas, normal level of activity that Washington and Tehran have kind of got used to in the region, that really is a very big uncertainty.
Well, certainly our listeners have their theories about the president's decision, what's behind the president's decision to approve the strike on Soleimani. Hanea writes, a new war is certainly the surest tool for re-election. Apparently, it's not a politician's job to worry about innocent lives that will be destroyed. Paul asks, could it be that the president decided to make a bold move to distract the public and the media from the negative coverage that the impending impeachment trial will generate? Do you have a reaction to that, Jonathan Marcus?
Well, yes. So look, it is something that one expects people to say, that this is all about domestic politics. It's an election year, of course, and President Trump wants to get good headlines however he can. On the other hand, starting a war with Iran, which could be immensely costly in terms of US lives, is a hell of a way to go about winning an election. I think it's concern about losing American lives that might indeed have prompted this strike, because if you read between the lines, it's clear the Pentagon and the State Department believe that something was afoot with the Iranians, that the recent attacks on US installations in Iraq were only the beginning of a concerted campaign there with a clear goal of killing US service personnel in significant numbers. But, you know, as I say, this is a president who has made talk tough, made it clear often that he doesn't want to take tough action. It's a president who has spoken at length about getting out of all these forever wars that he argues previous administrations have got the country into. And, of course, that is a view that is very popular amongst President Trump's base. So just to say that this is all a warmongering attempt by the president to win votes and influence the outcome of the election, I'm a little skeptical.
Well, let me go to Damien in Walnut Creek. Hi, Damien.
Yeah, hi there, and happy Friday. My question is, Ayatollah Khamenei has now appointed a new commander of the IRGC for Al-Quds. Do you think that that guy is going to continue Suleiman's policy, and does he have the same credibility? I know he was a veteran of the Iran war. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Damien. Yes, tell us about the replacement that has been named, Jonathan Marcus.
Well, he's General Soleimani's deputy. We assume that in broad terms he will continue the policy. The policy is one that this expanding of Iran's influence in the region is seen widely in the leadership in Tehran as being a success. Of course, he is not General Soleimani in terms of his personality. Soleimani is an interesting man, extremely capable, extremely audacious, willing to take remarkable risks, but also, I think, not a gambler as such. You know, a man who made very fine judgments, and by and large, those judgments have paid off in Tehran's behalf. In a paradoxical sort of way, there is a worry in my mind that actually Soleimani, you know, may be more capable as an individual, maybe a deeper strategic thinker, if you like, than perhaps the people who come after him. We don't know.
And, so more so than Ismail Ghani, the replacement. He is more measured and more potentially more measured, you're saying, Jonathan Marcus.
Well, I don't know necessarily more measured, but he doesn't perhaps have the strategic view and sophistication that Soleimani has. And remember, before we paint Soleimani as simply an implacable foe of the United States, which in recent years he certainly became, this is a man who indirectly, at least, had a certain amount of cooperation with the United States in Afghanistan and so on. And more broadly, remember, there was a certain tacit understanding between the Iranians and the Americans in the earlier stages of the struggle against IS. So, you know, it's a very, very complex picture of interlocked interests and competing interests, which don't always necessarily pit Iran and the United States as being on opposite sides.
Well, let me go next to Joy in San Francisco. Hi, Joy.
Hi. I just have a few points. Idiocy. Mr. Trump does not believe in intelligence. So I find it really difficult to understand why he would take an action and take out this general. So that's really crazy to me. And wag the dog. That's all I want to say. And another thing that he doesn't realize, because he is not a strategic thinker, is the consequences. And it absolutely increases the power and grasp of Russia in Middle East. Thank you.
Joy, thank you. And I appreciate that comment. And I want to also talk about sort of broader geopolitical issues. Of course, Russia has condemned the attack on Soleimani, and also in terms of the intelligence, as Joy points out, she feels this president is not one to rely on intelligence. But it's hard for me to believe, Jonathan Marcus, that this action would be taken without the intelligence being there.
Well, look, clearly the practical intelligence in terms of carrying out the strike was there. This is a man who was followed around as best they could by technical means, by all sorts of various means, by both the Israelis and by the Americans. Maybe other intelligence agencies also had a hand in watching his movement. So their ability to find him and kill him is not a surprise.
No, but also the idea that he was plotting to imminently attack the U.S.
Well, I don't know if he was imminently plotting to attack the U.S., and we're going to have to hear more from the Pentagon and U.S. officials about what exactly it is that prompted this strike. I mean, we simply do not know yet. As I say, reading between the lines, one gets the impression that something was afoot. Whether it was of sufficient significance to merit taking the risk that clearly assassinating him amounts to is very much a moot point. And I think Joy's concern at Mr. Trump's lack, perhaps, of broader strategic vision, certainly from a European perspective, if you speak to analysts on this side of the pond, is very much reflected in their thinking. Analysts in Europe will tell you they believe this is not an American administration with necessarily the first team in its key security and foreign policy positions. As we well know, many of the Republican Party's brightest and best foreign policy experts refuse to serve in the Trump administration. They were viewed from this side of the Atlantic. Joy's concerns, I think, are very much reflected in the views of those people who watch U.S. foreign policy very closely.
We're coming up on a break, but could you lay out how this is going over in Iraq and the volatility that's there right now?
Well, look, Iraq is divided. You have a Shia-dominated government, which is a close ally of Iran, which has condemned the killing. It also condemned the earlier U.S. strikes against militias in Iraq and Syria, who were deemed responsible by Washington for the attacks on U.S. bases. The Iraqi government has an uneasy relationship with Washington. It's an ally of Washington as well. As I say, there are 5,000 troops, U.S. troops there training and supporting the Iraqi armed forces. But of course, there is a very large Sunni population in Iraq, many of whom may actually be quite pleased by the demise of General Soleimani, people who remember an Iraq that was dominated by the Sunnis and not the Shia. Remember an Iraq that was an implacable foe of Iran. So there are going to be very different views on the ground, depending, you know, upon which community people hail from.
Well, we will continue to take listener calls and questions about this after the break. Jonathan Marcus, defense and diplomatic correspondent for the BBC, thanks for joining us for this first half hour.
A pleasure.
And again, listeners, if you'd like to join, you can call 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Or you can reach us on Twitter, Facebook, or email us at forum@kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Iran has vowed harsh vengeance on the U.S. after a drone strike authorized by President Trump killed top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani. The Pentagon has said President Trump ordered the strike to disrupt an imminent attack on Americans in the Middle East. As tensions between the two nations escalate, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres expressed concern, asking world leaders to show maximum restraint. We're joined now by Mika Ouyang. She's Vice President for Third Way's National Security. Hello, Mika Ouyang. Thanks for joining us. We are getting word that some 3,000 troops have been deployed to the Middle East from the U.S. There is a growing presence to try to harden bases, protect Americans. The State Department had ordered the evacuation of Americans out of Iraq. What are your concerns, Mika Ouyang, about what Iran could do? And do you think that we are prepared for it?
So I think that what happened yesterday with the killing of Iranian General Soleimani is a very significant escalatory step for which Iran will feel like it must respond and respond in a very dramatic and serious way. I think that everyone's hoping that we will not wind up in a full-blown war, but Iran so revered this particular general, even as the rest of the world was very concerned about his activities sponsoring proxy wars, I think Iran will feel like they must do something to avenge his death. You see the U.S. very concerned about the American civilians in Iraq itself. There was some reporting that perhaps they might be targeted for kidnapping. I think we are very concerned that there could be attacks on U.S. military facilities, not just in Iraq, but throughout the Middle East region. And the other thing I think I'm at least concerned about is that Iran is a very capable cyber actor. Mm-hmm. Listeners may not realize, but the cyber attack that crippled the city of Atlanta was Iranian in origin. And so they could launch a series of cyber attacks against entities in the United States.
Well, let me get more listener questions to you. And I want to bring Sarah from Walnut Creek into the conversation. Sarah, join us.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to compare the current situation with the exact setup that they did here when they wanted to attack Iraq. To me, this is act of war and war crime by government of United States. Of course, all planned by government of Israel, and I am against government of Iran, of course, but this act is act of war, very similar to what they did to Iraq to destroy that country.
Well, let me get Mika Oyang's reaction to that. I mean, fair comparison, Mika Oyang?
I think that there are some significant differences between what happened in Iraq in 2003 and what happened here, but it is certainly true that the action here is sufficient to trigger a conflict. And so from that perspective, I think many people would treat it as an act of war. It is different in that the U.S. is not trying to invade and then occupy Iran at the time, which is what the U.S. did in Iraq in 2003. And the U.S. in 2003 showed a lot more of the intelligence, which turned out to be faulty, in its concerns about Iraq and made a much more public case before taking action, which the Trump administration has not done in this case.
Well, let me go next to Anil in San Leandro. Hi, Anil.
Hi there. A couple of things. I think that I just want to reiterate the previous caller's suspicion, as I do, that this is just another pretext. The Iranian government has been pushed and pushed and pushed, and at some point they will react. And when they do, my guess is that the Trump administration before November will attempt to destroy or want to destroy their nuclear assets and capabilities. That's the whole point. That's the final goal. I also think that this is an assassination against and contrary to U.S. law. We are so used to assassinations that we take it for granted now, but this is clearly an act of war, and it's horrible.
Anil, thank you. Mika Oyang, assassination, is that the word you'd use for this?
It's not the word that I would use. I think of these as targeted military strikes. But I understand that when you're talking about killing one person and not going through an extrajudicial process, that many people would refer to it as an assassination. And certainly the Iranians view it that way.
We had Jonathan Marcus from the BBC on earlier, and I was asking him about questions around who was notified of this action, how organized it was before it was carried out, how much it had been deliberated. What are you hearing around this?
Yeah, so I think there's a tremendous amount of concern on Capitol Hill that the appropriate members of Congress were not briefed in advance of this, the way that they were, for example, in the bin Laden raid. Our laws set up a process to brief certain members of Congress because, as a nation, we think that it's Congress that should make decisions about war and peace. That's in the Constitution itself. And so there are certain people that are supposed to be briefed to make sure that military action has sufficient political support. We're not seeing that. What we're seeing is, based on social media, that the president briefed a few people who were part of his in-crowd, Lindsey Graham, perhaps his son Eric, and perhaps Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but not some of our other treaty allies in NATO, like the French or the Germans or the British, and certainly not American congressional leadership, that would include Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. That's a real concern about whether or not there's sufficient political support here. And given how divided the country is, I think many people will be skeptical, and rightly so, of the president's intelligence and motives in launching this activity.
Well, you have been following Iran for quite some time. And my last question to you is just, how do you see this playing out? And I know it's very early to tell, but what do you see as the potential trajectory or the likely trajectory of this?
Yeah, I think that Iran is a country that likes to act through proxies and not directly. Before, they were funding terrorist groups like Hezbollah and other Iraqi insurgents in the region to attack U.S. troops instead of doing it directly. What the U.S. has done here is gone directly at the Iranian government officials, so I would expect them to retaliate directly against American military targets in the region. But I also think that they are a country with a very long memory and, you know, are prepared to serve their revenge cold, as it were. And so it may be some time before we see what Iran's reaction is. But what's certainly true is that U.S. allies have not been particularly warm to this action.
Well, Mika Ouyang, she is the vice president of the National Security Program at Third Way, which is a center-left political think tank. We really appreciate having you on this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for their questions. We will be following this and looking at developments over the weekend and talking about it on Monday on Forum as well. So join us for that. I'm Mina Kim.